now recording, and we're going to make that available through the website. And I'll stop my share. And our speaker tonight is Alan German. He's going to talk to us about Android. So, Alan, take it away.
Okay, good evening, everyone. I hope you can see the title slide to start off with.
Yes, we can.
I'm going to talk about Android phones, but a lot of what I talk about will actually apply to Android tablets as well. But I'm talking about the phone because that's what I spent most of my time fiddling around with. So to start off with, let me just show you the current technology. I actually have a Motorola G3 smartphone, and its code name is Osprey, if anybody's following that kind of thing. And when I bought this thing, it was probably in 2016, I think, it came with Android 5, which was codenamed Lollipop. And it has a Snapdragon quad-core processor. And one of the downsides of this thing is it's an old phone, obviously, a few years old now. It only has 8 gig of onboard storage, and I find that to be a limiting factor. And it has 1 gig of RAM, but I don't notice any particular issues with the actual live memory, as it were. It's just the amount of storage that's available. And we'll talk about that quite a bit as we go along. Talking about Android. Android, as everybody probably knows, is an operating system. It was developed specifically for mobile devices, touchscreens in particular. And mobile devices really means small, relatively low-powered, not terribly powerful type computers. And interestingly enough, it was actually developed by a company called Android Incorporated. And they were purchased by Google in 2005. So Google actually didn't develop Android. They basically just bought the company, as they say. From my perspective, one of the really interesting things is that Android is actually based on Linux. In particular, it's based on the Linux kernel. And so the main piece of the operating system is the Linux kernel. And all of the ancillary software is actually, it's specially written for Android. Now, I said that my phone came with Lollipop version 5, and there have been a number of versions of Android since that. Version 6, which my phone got upgraded to, was codenamed Marshmallow. And that was the last time I got an official upgrade. But I did upgrade it to version 7, which was Nougat. I'll talk a bit about that. I skipped over version 8, which was Oreo. And most recently, in the last few months, I've actually upgraded to version 9, which is the codename Pi. And since that time, Google has dropped these dessert names, and now they're just using the numbered release, 10 and 11. 11 is the current version. Because it's based on Linux, it really means it's an open source system. And one of the main things about Android is the Android Open Source Project, AOSP. So the code, the actual code that drives the operating system is all available in the public domain. And that will be important, as we'll see later on. And it's designed for small screens, limited amounts of storage, and essentially enhanced battery life. So you're trying to make the most out of a small, relatively powerful package. And it's a comprehensive system. It's got the operating system and all the apps and all the drivers that you need to run the hardware. And quote, it's easily modified. Well, personally, I take exception to that, and it's easily modified by people who know what they're doing. And I actually think it's quite a difficult process. But it depends. If you're familiar with Java, it's probably fairly simple. I didn't grow up in the object-oriented programming world, and Java's a bit of a monster as far as I'm concerned. But if you're interested in developing for Android, either apps or even the whole operating system, there is a software development kit, the SDK, which is available. And what that makes happen is that you end up with multiple versions. Google are producing the gold standard, if you like, sometimes referred to as the vanilla version of Android. But all the manufacturers basically usually build some form of Android which is customized to their particular phones. But you also have third-party people who do various remixes and different versions of the software as well. One of the problems with Android, as far as I'm concerned, is that the update system, which normally is over the air, so you turn your phone on and it will check to see if there's an update available from its repository somewhere, and it will download the update and install it for you. But those are only available for a certain period of time. And the second thing is that if you don't have a Google phone, if you have a Motorola, for example, or any other manufacturer for that, the third-party manufacturers are really slow to upgrade their phones when the new releases of Android come out. But the major problem is that Android has an end-of-life schedule, and people don't know about it. And I make the comment here, when will your phone's Android no longer be supported? Do you all know? Is it already an orphan? Is it going to be an orphan in another a month or a year? Typically, it's something that you don't check when you buy your phone, and that can be a problem. It's a really popular operating system. It's probably more popular than Windows in terms of the number of supported devices. But it also has a shorter lifespan than most Windows releases, which is surprising, to me at any rate. And so the big problem is that Google will make a new release of Android, but for most of us, there's no path to get the new version of Android. So what do we do then? We end up with an Android which is stuck in time, and it's susceptible to security violations because we're not getting security updates. So I say, what then? Well, there is a solution. There's actually a couple of solutions. One is what most people do, is that's buy a new phone. And the other, well, we'll talk about a little later on. So what about the end-of-life policies? I put this presentation together about a year ago, so some of these slides may not be completely up-to-date, but I think they're probably reasonably close. And this is one I haven't updated, so this is as it stood a year ago. If you had a Google phone, a Nexus or a Pixel, then you would get version updates, i.e. if they went from what Windows would call a feature release, if you went from a numbered release of Android to the next numbered release, those version updates would be good for at least 2 years. And if you had a Pixel rather than a Nexus, and the Pixel is the higher-end Google phone, then you'd be good for 3 years. Everybody, or Google phone owners, get security patches for 3 years. However, if they stop selling the phone, then it's only good for 18 months after the phone is no longer sold. So if you end up buying the phone at the end of its shelf life, as it were, then you may have a very short time frame for security updates. But what about the rest of us? Motorola and Samsung and Sony and everybody else who's got a different kind of phone. Well, now the updates are being managed by the phone's manufacturer. So individual manufacturers set the update schedule, if you like. And as I said, they take their sweet time. And it says here it may take up to 2 weeks. Well, I think sometimes it takes quite a lot longer than that. And version updates may be discontinued after 18 months. So you get whatever version you buy the phone with, you may get an update. But then after 18 months, you're not going to see any further version updates. So what happens if you decide you want to buy a new phone? So a year ago, the Motorola One was kind of a high-end Motorola phone. It had 8-core CPU, 128 gig of RAM, and it cost about $600. So for me, I mean, that's not a terribly expensive phone by today's standards. They seem to be, you know, $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 and up. So $600 is probably a mid-range phone, if you like, really. But it's still $600. It's not an inexpensive phone in my book. So if you're thinking about buying one of those, maybe you'd go to the Motorola page, which would tell you about how you can upgrade it. And it would ask you, well, you know, one of your questions might be, will my device receive an upgrade? And how am I going to do that? Well, never fear. All the information you need is right here on this page. And sure enough, it tells you that Motorola is committed to regular and timely security upgrades as recommended by Google. And while phones can't be upgraded indefinitely, we provide security upgrades within the industry standard. Well, what is the industry standard? I don't think there is an industry standard, unless it's that, you know, 18 months type of thing and you're out of luck. So that's the big problem with Android as far as I'm concerned. It has a very limited shelf life before it loses security. What about the basic applications that we get with our phone and maybe we install a few? Well, I mean, everybody uses the phone as a phone, and we all like to use text messaging, SMS. And we probably have an email capability on our phone. And I actually changed from the standard email client to use K9, which is an open source product. I also changed the browser from the default browser, and I used Opera. And then after that, you have contacts where you have your friends' phone numbers and email addresses. You have a camera where you can take your pictures and store digital images. You have settings so you can change all kinds of different aspects of the phone, how it works. And probably most importantly, access to the Google Play Store, where you can access all kinds of different applications. And the reason you would do that is because although the phone generally comes with a whole raft of apps which are already bundled with the Android operating system, and these apps don't necessarily give you everything that your heart's desire. But there are other apps available from the Play Store, and there are lots and lots of apps available from the Play Store. And you can also get some from third parties, although that's generally not recommended. And it says some third parties, including the Offer PC Users Group. We actually have a Google app, or an Android app, anyway. So here's some of my favorite apps. I mentioned changing the email client to use K9. And one of the nice things I think about K9 is it lets me use multiple accounts and multiple folders. So, for example, I have an ISP and I have a mail server with that ISP, and I share the mail service with my wife. So Alan and Carol is our main email service, if you like. OPCUG's Board of Directors has a a Gmail-based communication system. And so I have a second account at opcug.ca. So because K9 will let me set up both accounts, and I can access both accounts from my smartphone. And then each account can have different folders. So you have the typical folders like the inbox, the outbox, the sent box, the trash. And but you notice I've also got a couple of special folders there. One for my messages, which it goes into Alan, and one for my wife's messages, which goes into Carol. So that's a useful way of sorting things out for my wife and I. And then if you open the inbox for any one of these accounts, then you can see all the various emails. K9 gives me nice color codings and shows me pretty pictures of people. And by default, the inbox displays for any given account. And if I click on any message, then I can look at the message content. And I get a typical kind of screen where you see who the thing's coming from and when it was sent and the text and that kind of thing. So this is a text from my buddy Skyly at Minitool, probably wanting me to review another one of their products. I mentioned the browser that I use, which is Opera. One of the things I like about Opera is it has this speed dial system. So you can set any website to be a customized button on the home screen. So you can probably see here I've got a button for Google Search. Or rather Google itself. I've got BBC News, the weather, and that kind of thing. And just touching those calls up the website. It also has a Google search bar built into it. And one of the things I really like about smartphones is that you can have a voice-activated system. So if I touch the microphone key here, I can enter my search command just by using my voice. And that can be quite useful sometimes for dictating text messages, for example, rather than having to type them out one finger at a time, which is the way I otherwise would do it. And the other features that are nice about the Opera browser on the phone is it has built-in ad blocking, and I've enabled that one. So some of the pop-up ads don't show because of that. And it also has a built-in VPN, a virtual private network. So if I'm concerned about secure access to a website or other, I could actually turn that on and use the VPN that's built into Opera. So one of the things you're all asking is, okay, you've got this beautiful user interface on the home screen, but there's no way to get to the OPCUG website. So how do you do that? Well, as I say, we have other technology for that. And if you took a close look at my home screen, you would have seen I have this app on there called SiteFinder. And if you look at this is a year old, so this is the old website, the old homepage. But if you go to the bottom of the current webpage, you'll find there's a link to the SiteFinder app. And basically this is an APK, it's a software package that you can install on your Android smartphone. So it comes up with an icon on the homepage. And if you just touch that icon, then the first thing that happens is it loads a splash screen, and that just kind of sits around for a few seconds, and then the app takes you directly to the home page of the PC users group. So now you can navigate around the website, and when you're done, you can hit the back button here, and that will take you to the second screen, which if you want, you can hit the live link there and go back to Oops, what happened there? We lost you. Are we back in business? I think we are. Yeah, so the live link will take you back to the PC user group if you really want to. Another app I use quite a lot. I used to have a standalone GPS system that I used in the car. But when I got my smartphone, I found that I could install a GPS navigation app. And the one I use is called Map Factor Navigator. And one of the nice things about this is it has offline maps. So the maps are you download to the phone. So I don't need an internet connection when I'm driving anywhere in the area or anywhere that I have a map already downloaded for. So I could have an Ontario wide map, for example, or Ontario and Quebec maps. Anywhere I go locally, I have the capability to see where I'm going on the GPS map. And even better than that, Navigator uses OpenStreetMaps, which are free maps, and they're available worldwide. Now, these are all free apps. This is a free app, and so every now and then it'll bug me and say, well, you want to use the free maps or you want to buy them from TomTom? Well, I want to use the free maps because they work really well. One of the nice things is you can search for an address or you can search for a point of interest if you know what you're looking for. But the really good thing about this is once you've set where you want to go and you tell the phone to navigate, then the nice lady comes and tells you turn by turn, turn left in 500 meters, turn left here, and there to the right, go straight ahead. Please drive the approved route when you trying to confuse her, things like that. And the other thing that's useful, it has a bunch of favorites. They call it My Places. So you can set places that you normally visit and store them on board. And another feature, which I actually don't use, is a speed or a red light camera warning system, which you can download. And I don't know how that well works, but it's available. This is the home, the main screen, and you can see that you have a search capability. One of the downsides with the search capability is it's great if you know where you are and you know where you want to go. So anywhere in Ottawa, you can just type in the street name. But if you get outside of the Ottawa area, let's say you go way out west beyond the kind of regular city environment, as it were, and you know the road that you want to go to, and you say, well, I want to look in Ottawa, and I want this road, and it will say it can't find it. And the reason for that is because, as far as the map is concerned, the road doesn't belong to Ottawa. It belongs to Richmond or, you know, some little town outside of Ottawa. And until you know exactly where the street is nearest to, it'll be kind of difficult to find. You can always use the map and figure out where it probably is, as it were. One of the really useful things, as I said, it has worldwide maps. So if you hit the map manager icon, you'll find that you can access all these different maps for anywhere in Europe, anywhere in America, and so on and so forth. So, for example, if you get outside of your hotel in Venice and you wander through the canals and suddenly you decide you want to go home because it's dinner time, and having a map of Italy and being able to use turn by turn to get back to your hotel can be very, very useful. And of course, you can also tell it one of your favorite places can be your home location. And this is my home. It seems to be the location, the intersection of Montreal Road and Ogilvy. I actually don't live on that intersection, but it's fairly close, and I can find my way back from there, but anybody who steals my phone probably won't be able to, although they'll probably find my name, and they'll probably find my phone number, and they'll probably be able to track me down and go and burgle my house anyway, but they won't be able to do it using my GPS system. Another feature I quite like on smartphones is having a reminder system, and especially if it has an alarm. And for a while I was using this one, Just Reminder. It's a task reminder, to-do list kind of thing. The alarm is configurable, so you can tell it you want to be reminded an hour before your meeting or 5 minutes before your appointment or whatever you want. And you can also set various categories, so you can remind yourself of, your wife's birthday. Who would forget your wife's birthday? Or bill payments that you have to make and that kind of thing. And the thing beeps when it's ready and beeps 5 minutes thereafter and basically bugs you until you turn it off. So it's quite a useful system. Another app I found fairly recently and that I quite like is Writer Plus. It's essentially I call it a local text editor. And the reason for that is because it doesn't actually open any old text file. It opens text files that it created. So what I use this for is if I'm out somewhere and I have to make a note, then I can just pull up this Writer Plus, type in or dictate a note, and then save the note as a file, and it's available for me later on. It's got some features in terms of it has what they call markdown. So you can boldface text and use italic and bullets and numbered lists and that kind of thing. You can have multiple files and you can also have multiple folders if you so desire. One of the other things is useful with phones is to be able to upload and download files. And normally people will do that by plugging in a USB cable. And sometimes that can be difficult because the phone isn't set to do the data the file transfer, and it can be hard to find the setting that turns that thing on. You also have to dig out the cable when you want to transfer the files. So I found this little utility called Software Data Cable, which is really quite nice. And the way it works is this is the main screen. So at the bottom you say, well, you hit the computer. I want to connect my computer, please. And it says, well, just click on this button here and we'll make the connection for you. And what it does is it gives you an IP address. And so basically you're going to enter this IP address into an FTP client and use FTP to actually make the transfer. So here's the FTP address. Here's my FileZilla client. So I set up my website that I want to connect to, called it smartphone. I enter the IP address and the port number. I use an anonymous login, so I don't have to enter a user ID and a password. And then when I make the connection, I have to choose over here which storage location I want. So, for example, I can take the main storage on the phone, the internal storage, and then within that, I can drill down through the various folders until I find, say, pictures in the screenshots folder. I can highlight the files that I want to transfer and then just drag them from the right side over to my computer, which is in the left-hand window. So it's a fairly quick and easy process to do file transfer. Another utility that I use a lot is called Quick Reboot. And one of the problems I have with this Motorola phone is that it has a black case, and it has a tiny little black button as the power button. And it's also essentially flush with the side. So you have to hold the phone in the light so you can distinguish which is the button and which is the side of the phone And then I have to use a fingernail, essentially, to press the button because it's so small. And if I want to go into recovery mode, I have to use the volume key and the power key at once. And so all this becomes just difficult to manhandle. It's much easier if you could do it using software. And that's essentially what this program does. You'll see it has features to shut down the phone and or boot into recovery. However, you notice that it needs root access. So remember that Android is a Linux system, and root in Linux means having super user status.